level 8. As you turn left, you see your neighbor, who has been causing you a lot of stress recently. They claim you have been leaving rubbish on the street, which you haven't. They've been getting more and more aggressive towards you. You tense up as they get nearer. As they pass you, they mutter something under their breath. I think happened to me twice, and a friend of mine tell me happened it once to him. The first time I couldn't really understand what they are telling to me. It was really aggressive. But the second time, definitely, I heard the guy tell you, back to your home, you know, foreigners, whatever. You have been trying to stay strong, but that comment from your neighbor has pushed you over the edge.
When you sit and wait, it's the worst nightmare.
Everything hits you all at once.
When you sit and wait, it's the worst nightmare.
It's like you are in lockdown forever.
You feel completely helpless and alone.
I have no power, I have no degree. I have no money.
You are exhausted and unwell.
I have no powerful people with me.
My voice is not enough.
Can you imagine my age and I'm here trying to start all over again? Do you know what that means?
A list of the food banks
around me. What will I be able to do with £5 a day?
A list of the food banks around me.
You can't see your family.
It's not enough.
You don't have to hug your mom.
They're depriving us from liberty, that security.
The thieves and the robbers and
foreigners, whatever.
My voice is not enough.
You are taken in as not even a second-class citizen now, as less than a second-class citizen. You're being seen around you as somebody who's come to grab, who's come to take away. You are not viewed as somebody who has something to offer, who has potentials to give in, who has the ability to make the environment, the community, what it needs to be.
You go home, feed the baby, and get into bed. Your appointment is tomorrow.
Hint available. Read hint. You must attend your appointment. If you do not, then your claim may be dismissed and you are at risk of being detained.
Yay! Hombera? Hombera? Wambera. Yay! Oh.
You wake up the next day. Your Aspen card still hasn't arrived. The internet is working again, but the home office still haven't responded to your request for travel assistance. The appointment is today, and there is no way you will make it.
Hint available. Read hint. You must attend your appointment. If you do not, then your claim may be dismissed and you are at risk of being detained.
So in the morning, like 6 o'clock, I've heard lots of noises, you know, like someone trying to break the door. Like I jumped up. I thought maybe something I'm dreaming. So they broke into the house, men, women, they just rushed into the room. And I'm like, okay, let me just, because I was on the bed. And I'm like, let me just put the hijab on, put the scarf around me, and then I'm going to talk to you. One guy came, he took my phone. Now I know that police, you can deny the access to your phone. But that time I didn't know that. And they're like, okay, give me your phone. And then, no, you don't switch off. You don't touch your phone. You don't change anything. Just give it to me. Okay, he took the phone. He was randomly checking my phone. And he was asking, who is this guy? Who is that guy? You know, or is it the guy you're working for? And I'm like, who said I work? And I'm like, no, I don't. And he's, okay, then we're going to take the custody of the phone. And then you get ready. You come with us. Then I said, look, I need to have a shower before I go out. I'm not in that state that I can go with you right now. There was a reason, you know. And they were like, oh, we have to, like, we cannot leave you alone. They're like, oh, you have to keep the door open. I'm like, seriously, how can someone have shower and keep the door open? And then the lady was like, okay, we have to come inside then. She came inside the bathroom, but still she kept the door open. I could see the male officers, you know, they're walking around that place. If I could see them, obviously they could see me too. And I was telling her, you just close the door, because I can see people are watching. I can see them. And she is like, no, I'll still have to keep a little bit gap. They were like touching my belongings, and I felt like exposed. You know, I didn't feel that I had any privacy. I didn't know where am I going. I felt like I'm a criminal. And the shame, it just, you know, it captured me. It made my heart become stone in fear. My heart, it became stone. There was no other feeling in it. I stopped feeling and I was numb because of the shame. I had to pack a few things. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I just took a few things in the luggage in front of me. Obviously, I was in a rush. I wanted to do it quickly. Then in rush, I hurt my hand. When they were taking me, that lady, she folded that left arm at the back of my body, twisted it. And I said, look, I have pain in my arm. I've already told you. And I'm going like willingly. And she's like, oh, I have to hold your hand. And I'm like, okay, then hold my right hand. And she was still holding it. So I'm a girl of 5 feet, I'm 5 feet 2 inches. There were male who were like nearly 6 feet. So why are they so scared of a girl who is not a criminal, who doesn't have any criminal record, who is a victim herself, and they had arms with them? Why did they have to fold and hold and twist someone's arm just to make sure they're safe? Is it sensible? As I said, I was sick. So when they took me into the van, there, after a couple of minutes, I started vomiting. And even in the van, they were talking about me. You know, the officers, they loudly were passing comments about me. Like, you should have seen her attitude. You know, the way she did this, that, like, I wanted to have a shower. For them, it was an attitude. Even though I was really polite, really nice with them, they were constantly passing comments on me. So, like, to those guys, I wasn't anything. I wasn't a human being at all. I was just a number. I was just a prisoner, or maybe I was just a captive. That's it. Yazud is the name of the place, and it's a detention center. It's an immigration removal center. But people, in short, they just call it a detention center.
If somebody is in the UK and they don't have the correct immigration status that allows them to stay here, they are under threat of being detained by the UK government. This will usually be, or at least should be in theory, for purposes of removing that person from the UK. And there are a number of different detention sites up and down the country, which many of which are former prisons, usually quite high security prisons, and people can be held there indefinitely. The UK is one of very few countries in Europe that doesn't have a time limit on how long somebody can be detained there. And obviously, once somebody goes into that detention centre, they're not allowed to leave. There are some visiting groups which provide some support, but it's very much like being in prison, but without knowing how long you're going to be held there.
They took me to Yarlzud, and the whole journey, I vomited. I kept throwing up the whole, imagine, 2.5 hours. I was like a dead person by the end of the time, because I didn't have any food. I was stressed. I was sick. And this is not a nice place, you know. There were 2 beds in every room. You have to share with someone a bathroom. Yazid is really big. You know, it's like a maze. Inside, there are 4 different sections. They're named after birds. Why? I don't know. Because people are captive there. You shouldn't like put the name of the birds. Avocet, crane, dove, and I think nightingale. In every section, trust me, the officers, the way they behave like you stole something from their purse. You know, when they pick on someone, they become really hostile. It's inhuman. Some of the officers, they tried to make the place feel like a prison. They behave like police, not the nice police, bad police. And the worst thing is, like whenever you have to go to an office or you have to meet an officer or a solicitor, you have to go through so much security that makes you feel not nice, to be honest. Like every time you're passing that area, they're going to do the checkup, the body checkup, they're touching you. And, you know, they try to be as gentle as possible, but it doesn't make you feel good inside your head. And there is a constant pressure there, because every time you see someone, they're crying, they're yelling. Some of them, like, they're traumatized mentally. Some of them are not doing great at all. You know, people, they're losing their relatives. Maybe they've been denied bail. Like, it is a really horrible place.
Immigration detention is only supposed to be used, in theory, as a last resort for the shortest possible period of time and to remove people from the UK. The concern is that in practice, that is far from the case for too many people. And from people that the British Red Cross works with, when you talk to them about immigration detention, as well as obviously people being ripped from their homes and from their communities, the lack of certainty and the lack of a time limit on how long somebody can be detained there cause incredible negative impacts on people's mental health.
I wanted to make the most use of it. I used to attend all the classes, all the therapies, most of the classes available. I was there, I was cooking, I was trying to be sane. I didn't want to become insane because I had a lot going on in my head right at that time. I had lots of personal issues. I was constantly in tension about my case. I didn't know if I have to go back to my country. There was no certainty that those people could do anything to me. from outside, you know, people used to think I'm a really happy-go-lucky person, and maybe I'm really happy. Even my nurse, like I had a shield, a wall so strong, even my mental health nurse, he was thinking that I'm perfect, I'm all right. And I'm like, you don't know what is really going on. And the things you have written in the report is not correct. I just had a meltdown. I started crying and I'm like, it never happens. When I talk, I don't cry. And I'm like, you know, no one comes to visit me. I'm not telling anyone what's really happening. I didn't see my parents for 6-7 years then, 7-8 years. I was skipping meals a lot. I was hardly eating. And after that, when I was hungry, there was nothing much to eat. You know, in the shops, you can buy crisps. You can buy maybe packet soups. But you cannot bring any bowl or mug, any spoon in the room. So you can't make anything. And then there are some issues, like at nighttime, they always come and check. Even I'm really light sleeper, I hardly sleep. And you know, they, like in the middle of the night, they'll open the door and check if the person is there. They have the key, they'll just open it. So I don't know if a man is looking at me or if a woman is looking at me. And if it's a man, anything can happen. Obviously, there are other rumors and stuff. So girls have a feeling. I don't think even you'd like to have anyone to come and check your room at 12 o'clock in the night. You know, people tried to commit suicide there a few times. People did commit suicide in the detention. They don't want to let this story spread out. They don't want anyone to see the body. You know, they just get rid of it. So people even don't know where the bodies go. So things do happen there. I knew that I had a case going on. I had a pending application. But they said, oh, it's, you don't, like in our record, it says you don't have any application pending, you're an absconder. And I said, how? I tried to contact Home Office so many times. I didn't have any phone calls from them. I didn't have any letter from them. How come I can be an absconder?
There are a number of people in immigration detention who have also been imprisoned quite often for immigration offences. But people often compare the two and say that actually in prison, they were counting down the days and that actually gave them something that they were looking ahead to. Whereas in immigration detention, people count up because they simply don't know how long it's going to be. They may be there for 2 or 3 days, they might be there for a few weeks. But there are also cases of people who've been in immigration detention for several years. So there's that lack of certainty that just causes so much mental distress. And ultimately, in most cases, proves to be completely unnecessary because the vast majority of people who enter immigration detention end up being released back into their communities in the UK, which is why organisations like the Red Cross feel it's much better for people to be supported in those communities to make sure that people are treated with as much humanity and dignity as possible, and immigration detention simply doesn't allow that to happen.
Being taken by Home Office, for me, it happened all in a sudden. I wasn't prepared for it. But my question is, why Home Office is so reckless or so irresponsible that they didn't look into someone's paper first before coming, breaking into the house? I was already a victim, you know? I was already like was under so much trauma and pressure. So why do I have to go through all over it? And finally, when I went to the court, the judge, when I showed him all the papers, judge nullified the point that I was an absconder. He said, no, she wasn't. She was trying to contact Home Office. So why did I have to do all that?
Now, go and listen to Level 10.